The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
I'm Matthew Pascal with the Office of Career Professional Development. I'm going to thank you all for coming to our program on secrets of callback interview. I'm pleased to be joined by WCL alumnus Dan Binstock, graduated in 2000, no stranger at all to successful callback interviews, having done so here at the law school and ended up at Finnegan Henderson, a very prominent intellectual property law firm, upon graduation. Then he's probably a little bit bigger, he got his career, but where his position now is as managing director of BCG Attorney Search, a very prominent international attorney placement agency. And Dan is quite expert at coaching lawyers through the interview process, typically with a larger major national and international law firm. So I'm pleased to be joined by him up here.
Words. I don't pay him that much to say that, but I appreciate it. My purpose for being here today is to help basically give you all the inside secrets that I've learned in my job, which is coaching interviews before coaching attorneys before interviews, and then speaking to law firms after the attorney's interview. So I get to see both sides of the fence. I know what works, what doesn't work, what are the mistakes that people fall into, and how to best avoid mistakes to make the best. My life and my income is based on my candidates getting offers at law firms. So that's my whole demo, is to help people be successful.
In terms of with you today, let's find out who's in the audience. How many of you are 2Ls? And 3/4Ls? Okay, so certainly the majority of 2Ls. How many of you have already been on callbacks? Just a few of you. For those who have been on callbacks already, it'd be great to get some feedback from you in terms of what you're experiencing, what you've experienced, questions, et cetera. For those of you who have not, the way this program best works is rather than us being two talking heads up here, giving you information, which is valuable in itself, but to have it editing organically from the audience, that is to say, what are your issues? What are your concerns? Let's write those down, and then Dan and I will walk through our agenda with these questions in mind. I dare say our agenda will be very consistent for the questions that are now outstanding in your head in terms of this whole callback process. So what are some things you want to make sure we address in this presentation?
When the attorneys ask you, what are some questions you have for me, what are good questions?
Ask them.
Questions of me? Great. Other issues, concerns?
Yeah. How enthusiastic should you be about moving to their location or something like that, where their offices are?
Great. Other questions? In the back.
Maybe interviewing the firm or practice group you're not super interested in.
Just start calling them out now. In front of you, there was another one.
Sorry, I had to. One is, what kinds of facts are good to include when they say the beginning, just tell me about yourself? Another is, does it seem wishy-washy or desperate when you know that they might not have an opening in your particular field, but you want to like demonstrate flexibility?
Great question. Other,
what if you're interested in litigation and corporate at the same time? I can address that.
Blind interest.
Yeah, what's a good answer for why do you want to work for our firm or in the firm atmosphere? the firm atmosphere particularly, and you don't want to say money.
What about for the balance in addition? Let's talk about what. Can you ask questions about firm, life, balance, and money? Excellent.
How informed do you need to be about a specific practice area that you've expressed an interest in, but You obviously have to speak to the lawyer in that area.
Folks in Norway.
Okay. What are they looking for? Are they looking for personality fit? Are they looking to see if you'll take the conversation back to substantive issues of all, or to chat, or sort of what are they looking for?
Do they want?
What if you're interviewing them?
Is it appropriate to ask about pro bono?
Appropriate to write this thing.
For second career law students, how do you answer the question, so why didn't you go directly to law school, or why did you change, to law?
Why did you there?
Thank you.
Are there any appropriate questions to ask about what you can expect after your interview? You know, as far as process. Like, are there even any appropriate questions to ask, and if so, what are they?
About the process.
About finding you, you know, can I expect you to have an
And let others arise if they may, because this is the, got about, it's about 120. Certainly a lot of time, but probably spend all that time addressing one of these questions rather than all of them. What do you think, Dan? You think this is a fair jumping off point? Because to me, looking at these questions, I really see the subject matter we want to cover. And we did obviously take detours along the way, but, it might be good just to start sort of plopping right into the questions as they exist. So let me throw the first one at you. And it's a big question. What is an employer looking for? What is an interviewer looking for? Well, actually, before we get here, sort of give us some perspective. You've been through the initial interview process, 20 minutes, and now we're up against the several hours, some of which involve lunch and dinner. Certainly in all interviews, just in terms of perspective, what's the difference between the bottom line difference between a 20-minute screening interview and that callback interview?
The biggest difference right off the top of my head is that the screening is just essentially summary judgment. Have you met a sort of standard? You have the required grades and the required personality to have initial indications of success. This is all about really getting to know you on a much deeper level. A lot of small individual screening interviews, you won't be meeting with any one person for several hours at a time, but you'll be meeting with a lot of people. So the biggest difference is you'll be having a lot of the same conversations with a lot of different people, which is okay to sound like a broken record because the second biggest difference is that now is really the time to show them why you are a good candidate for them to hire. There's a lot more, I think, for lack of a better word, advocating and selling yourself at this point as opposed to merely just chit-chatting. And in terms of statistics, I think the most recent statistic from now, I think it was either 2005 or 2006, said that 60% of the people that go on callbacks in Washington, D.C., and this is taking into account all of the B.C. law schools, there were 9, 10 around here, Portland, Maryland, Virginia, 60% of the people that go on callbacks get offers. Of those, 25% accept at a particular firm. So a firm needs to make 4 offers on average for one person to accept. When I was in law school, there was sort of this notion that if you go on a callback, you pretty much got the offer, which is not true at all. I went on tons of callbacks and didn't get offers. So it's important that this is your time to shine, that you really need to go in and be prepared and put your best foot forward. That's sort of the mind frame. It's showtime.
It's showtime. What would have helped you beyond
initial programs like this, information, handouts like this, people pass around?
What are some other things law students can do, candidates in your case, best prepare for a callback interview?
I think the best thing you can do is, single-handedly, the best thing you can do is mock interview with career services. I'll tell you a quick story about blind spots. The problem with interviewing is you don't know what you don't know. You don't realize if you're doing something, it comes off a little weird. You don't realize when you're stepping into a landmine that that's not the right answer or which could be perceived the wrong way. I see all the time, I do mock interviews with candidates that are at the top firms that are looking to go to other firms. And I will find so many things they're slipping into, traps. And so the purpose of a mock interview is to get a second point of view. The other day I was working on this tool that I'm creating for law students around the country on helping them decide between different law firms. I created this, I'd sort of been looking at it for a long time, getting blurry eyes, thinking, you know, it's looking good, I'm ready to hit send, I don't want to deal with it. There may be problems, but I'm just kind of like, when you're writing a paper, you just don't want to go over and proofread it again. You'd rather not know what to say, so there's pain. I'm like, you know what, I shouldn't do this. I should call, you know, Matt always gives me a good second opinion, and he's kind of ruthless, but I like him because he shows me what I don't know. And he came back with a bunch of things that I thought were great changes that I didn't even think of that could have been much clearer. So they're constantly reminders of what you don't know can hurt you. And that's why doing a mock interview is so critical, and attending these types of things to help prepare yourself in terms of what you don't even realize you may not be doing the right way. The other thing is, so that's one thing, is to prepare the right way, not just spending 14 hours trying to memorize the bios of everybody. That's useless. You should know the people, but doing mock interviews is probably the best thing you can do. The second best thing to do is really know, or take the time to get to know who you are. It requires you to get to know beyond the classes you're taking. If you're a litigator, what is it about you that you think will make a good litigator? Why? You have characteristics. We can talk about this a little bit more. But I think a lot of people are so focused on the law firm, what do I need to do to impress them? They don't really take the time to get to know who they are or why they, what strengths they bring to the table as a person. That's a big mistake that I made. I just kind of was oblivious as to who I was when I went through fall recruiting. This is my initial sort of too high level.
Law firm, to pick up on what Dan said in terms of content, it goes to what questions of, I know that's actually the question that me or the interviewer is asking, questions to you, your motivation for being here. Now, let's face it, at this point, it becomes somewhat generic to some of you who feel like, well, one big firm is like the other, and how can I distinguish the two? It's going to be up to you to be able to sell your story to that firm as it meets their profiles, which differ ever so slightly and sometimes very dramatically. What's your motivation for being here? As Dan said earlier, it's a sales pitch. It's advocacy, though, really. It's lawyering. You're advocating for the best client that you have to sell. To the extent that you feel uncomfortable doing this, to the extent that you feel it's a bombastic or I'm not comfortable saying, you know, speaking accolades about myself, get over it. If you're not doing it here, you're really blowing it. Because everyone else is. That's not to say that you want to present in an arrogant style and talk about how great you are. But you do want to have at your side very compelling anecdotes, very real stories taken from, I don't care where, taken from high school, taken from your volunteer position, taken from a clinic experience, taken from your real life, that speak to some very compelling motivations as to why you're here, why you're studying law, why is it you actually are interested in fill in the blank, antitrust. What kind of personal reflection have you taken in before having made this big career decision? They want to make sure that they have mature decision makers that aren't going to just sort of whimsically come into this firm and and decide half a year later, a year later, that, well, maybe that wasn't such a great decision. I want to move forward. They're spending a lot of money, opportunity cost-wise, and financially. If you sort of say $350 an hour times 5 hours times the number of interviewees, that's a lot of money these firms are dedicating to their human capital. So they want to make sure that they're going to make going to have a good long-term. They're going to recoup that cost and make a profit on it. So you have to appreciate that and recognize that that's the seriousness with which you want to approach this. Not to say that this is all dire, the weight of the world is on your shoulders, because there should be some there should be a lot of enjoyment in it. At the end of the day, you want to have a dynamic, you want to have a rapport, you want to have a conversation with the individual that isn't just a deposition-like question and answer. That's probably, you know, one of the worst things you can do, and that speaks to, we'll start pulling out things here, before an interviewer, you know, what do you do when the person doesn't ask good questions, or is just sort of, is bored him or herself, or is, you know, just sort of tired. That happens. There's just so much you can do. Any sort of tips you want to focus on?
I just wanted to make one quick point about what you said before about the, you know, why are you in law school? A big concern I get from a lot of interviewers from law firms that are interviewing law students is, let's face it, when I went to law school, I did it to get my parents off my back. And I just didn't know what else I wanted to do. I couldn't really find a good job. And I figured if I go to law school, at least my grandparents can brag to their friends about me. My parents will think I'm a success, and I can use it as a good line if I'm at a bar. I'm going to law school next fall. Sounds like a good, you know, the decent thing. So a lot of people actually do not have really good reasons for going to law school. They just kind of go because it's a prestigious thing and it's a good education and it can't hurt. A lot of people that are top 5% of their class didn't necessarily know why they went to law school, but they're really good at memorizing and writing essays. So as the interview from the law firm, they want to know, does this person have, besides some good grades, good reasons for going to law school? I can't emphasize that enough. Or not even a good reason for going to law school, but do they have the characteristics that indicate being a successful lawyer? And so that's where it goes back to what Matthew was saying, showing the self-reflection. That's probably the most important thing, is being able to show self-reflection on who you are and your motivations for practicing law. Because best grades, if you don't seem like you have a real motivation for practicing, it's not going to be enough to get to it.
Now, you counseled a number of, students who have top grades and are getting the callbacks, but just aren't close to the deal. And oftentimes, it does come down to, well, all things considered, you know, I spoke with other folks who were perhaps not top 5 or the top 15, but that were more articulate in explaining their motivations for wanting to be here, who know their resume in and out, who speak convincingly about their resume. You want to, that's another sort of a strategy. You want to integrate into the conversation sort of the entirety of your portfolio, which includes talking about your resume and how it might integrate into this firm's practice. This is sort of a self-reflective part, knowing about you.
And then this handout here.
Yeah, Matthew, let's go ahead and pass that around. Sorry if I can do that.
There's a handout, what it's called, preparing for your interview like a lawyer should. And an interview is your opportunity to show, think of it as a big case. This is a trial. And you need to prepare for this like a lawyer would. You need to know the strengths of your case and the weaknesses of your case so that you can best address them. And so this document here sort of draws an analogy between this.
How did this make you all sick?
Like, does it seem like it's absolutely overwhelming? And how many people are overwhelmed when they hear me talking like this? Honestly, if anyone...
What's overwhelming about this? Who wants to share? I'm very curious. I know I felt overwhelmed when I was in law school. Yeah.
First, it is outside of your control. You can't anticipate every question. You're not going to... I mean, there's no... You can prepare like for a big case, but there's always a chance you're going to be blindsided. We're dealing with the uncertainty and tolerating the uncertainty of that. You know, it's so nerve wracking. I mean, selling this all, but and what, like, and for me, somebody who has like really very little idea of what practice area I want to go into, it's hard for me to know what to tell about myself because I don't really know what the qualifications are for what I ultimately want to do.
Right. Very good.
Every question that I'm supposed to be prepared to answer sort of leads me to another question about myself, and you know, and stuff that's not necessarily interview appropriate.
And we're sitting here saying, be able to argue the case, but we're really, you're not even going to have money as a fact, which you need to effectively argue the case.
Yeah.
Don't be thrown off by that.
Actually, part of this interview is about the repartee they can have with you, and they want to throw it off your feet. Ask these questions of how many people.
I went to law school because I really always wanted to argue. Yeah, they've heard these stories ad nauseum.
And on the victory, you would like to sort of start getting you into that uncomfortable zone.
And if they start doing that, don't freak out. Because what they're trying to do is sort of say, hey, let's have some banter here, loosen up, kids. And by the way, I'm bored of asking these questions, so I'm going to ask some fun. Don't take it personally. Take it as a challenge.
Quite frankly, you can study for your case. You can go before the judge. If you ever sat before a Supreme Court argument, for God's sakes, they ask questions from unanticipatable type of words.
So don't fear those questions. Embrace them. They speak not about, they're sort of less about content and more about how you respond to them. Are you thrown off by them? Does this upset you? Do you stammer? If they caught you off guard, do you need, are you in some kind of automaton that if a client asks you a question from left field, you're going to stammer and feel like, oh, embarrassed if you don't have the answer?
Part of it is how well do you handle questions that you don't have the answer to. So I'm glad you mentioned that question, because the next 55 minutes we're going to put you through interview boot camp. We're going to tell you what you need to know, what you don't, you know, pitfalls to avoid, and all that stuff. So take out your pen and paper, jot down notes, because there's no way you're going to remember all this information, but it's stuff that when you look back in a day or two or a week or two, you're going to be like, all right, well, that's a good point. I need to remember that. For it, fill your brain, the brain dump right here. Big expectations. Where do we begin?
Let's move to the questions to help with that information. Something that's knowledge about the practice or the question you could practice. Are they expecting this? Does the firm expect you to know exactly what the requirements are of the Hart-Scott-Rodino filing, if you've articulated some interest in antitrust law?
Well, depends. If you've worked on those at the SEC or at a private firm, then at the SEC, then they probably are going to want to talk turkey.
How much substance do you have to know? Well, if it's on your resume, if you've indicated an interest in it, you better be up to speed, at least to some respect, as to the law behind it. If you've written on it, for God's sakes, you better know what you've written about so that you can have that conversation. And if you've indicated this interest in antitrust, and of course I'm just filling in the blank, you better know, have an opinion about the Whole Foods merger, for instance.
That's incorporating current events. If you are interested in a particular practice area and you've demonstrated that or articulated it,
then I would say subject matter is on the table. And they'll, if that person is expert at it, they'll talk to you about it. They want to know about it. But if they're interviewing more generally, you're a rising 2L that just had your first year courses and, you know, there's not a whole lot of subject matter on your plate, don't be too freaked out about being grilled on what the nuances of a Q-tip trust are. God forbid you're interested in that, you say that, antitrust in state law.
Substance there. Anything else about substantive knowledge and being asked about it from a law school perspective?
Yeah, firms don't usually go into a lot of detail about, you know, the subject matter itself unless it's on your resume. However, they do want to know why you're interested in a particular subject matter. And that's what's important is to be able to articulate why you think you may be interested in antitrust. And
that's
another question that because I don't know if I should go into that
first point.
About why you're interested in a particular area?
I don't think you sort of touched on that, but I don't know what
attacks you were interested in that practice. Well, I think just if I were to draw an analogy here, I Yeah. If this is your answer, I'm interested in antitrust.
Okay.
What's compelling about this is to say, well, yeah, I took a course in law school and I think it's pretty interesting. And, you know, I have a couple friends that are antitrust lawyers and it seems like they're working on really cool things. Or turn that back to who are you as a person? Why are you interested in antitrust? For example, I've got a background in economics. I believe in, you know, a free market system. I did this type of, you know, in college, I did a paper on this. And, you know, I've done this type of study on our antitrust law.
You're doing an externship at the FTC.
So relate that back to who you are as a person. If you're interested in litigation, for example, could you give me some ideas as to why someone would be interested in litigation?
From a personal standpoint, I'll start off. When I was a little kid, I used to always argue with my parents. I hated losing, and I always liked to win. Could you give me some other examples about why someone's really a good litigator?
When your parents was an attorney and they used to litigate, you used to watch them as a kid and got all excited about it, something like that.
Okay, great. Who's got some other things?
Experience advocating for others who can't advocate for themselves necessarily.
Perfect.
I really enjoy chess. I enjoy games of strategy. I enjoy games that require someone to think ahead, someone to lose.
How many people here were athletes?
Fantastic answer. You know what I tell all my litigation candidates? Tell me the story about when you were working or when you were, you know, talk about how you were a rugby player, you were a lacrosse player. People that are athletes, normally that play competitive sports, have a tendency to want to win and hate to lose.
It's just sort of the DNA.
So you have, if that's part of who you are, a competitive but collaborative type of person. That is great, a great answer for a litigator.
I'm a competitive type of person. I love to win. Maybe my background in team sports as a football player, you know, volleyball, whatever it is.
Make that who you are, and that can be an explanation, much more than, you know, I did move forward and thought it was a cool, exciting,
you know, spend an afternoon. Part of your DNA as a person, if you're interested in family law, it's more because I've enjoyed counseling, helping people at their sort of most difficult times. I did peer counseling when I was in college, and I've always, you know, I've thought about getting a degree in psychology, and the idea of helping people at very difficult times is something that appeals to me as a person. So don't forget your past life experiences to help interweave into what practice area you may be interested in. And you can really, if you think a little bit about it and come up with a list, you can really sometimes shoehorn things that you may not even think are possible.
And let's step away from this now, because I think a lot of your, except that you're rising, except that you're a two-bell and you're interviewing for summer position, you might find that you don't have to actually state your claims now. But they're just asking generally what you're interested. Sorry. I have no idea. I mean, I haven't taken the FTC experience. Yeah, I took an econ class, but I don't know if I want to do antitrust. And I still can't actually articulate. That's okay, too. They're not asking you at this point to make a decision, but they would like to know that your mind's going somewhere.
Right.
Well, based on the fact that I got an A in some procedure, I really liked the strategic approach, case management, and strategy behind large-scale litigation. That's of interest to me now, Mr. Employer. Property was of some interest to me. I did well in it. I think I have the tools for it, but just sort of in terms of how it didn't stimulate me as much as. So you can actually talk about your experiences in such a way that it's open enough to indicate an ability to do the work and then some proclivity or interest, or some emerging interest in particular practice areas. But for the most part, for the summer programs, they're going to be putting you in slots, but they would like to know if you do have any answers to this kind of stuff, what they are. Then we want to move over to a lot of other questions.
I had an interviewer who asked me if there was any area of law I would not ever consider practicing in. Is it dangerous to answer that question? What's an appropriate response?
Great question. I think honesty gets everywhere. You know what? I took property. I got an A in it. I found it really boring. I mean, we'd be focused on future interests, et cetera, estates and trusts and estates and land. To the extent that's been my current exposure to it, I really don't think I'd be happy practicing that. However, I noticed that you do have a large commercial real estate practice. Maybe you can talk to me more about what that involves, as I understand with the credit crimes, there's probably a lot of work, loan work out, repayment that might have to be done, et cetera. So you can answer that honestly, but your answer is not singular punto or the period there. It leaves things open, but it's not putting you in this mushy category. You're flexible. You're making a decision based on precedent, past information, and experience that you've had. And then you're projecting into the future in such a way that you're smart enough not to close off opportunities at the firm, paint yourself into a hole, because you know what? Real estate might be the only booming practice that's happening here, young lady. But you're giving an answer to the best of your knowledge and abilities, to your current day's experience, and you're inviting some repartee. You're inviting some. Well, that's actually a very interesting reflection. I too hated trust in the States, and actually I took an advanced property law class. I didn't even like that. But when I got to the firm, I realized that property law, real estate law is more like, and then all of a sudden, she's talking about her experience in the real estate department, and that creates a tremendous amount of conversation.
That's a good point, Matt. And it's not the answer you give, but it's not necessarily the answer you give, but how well you support your answer. So what you were saying before is you don't have to go into an interview and say, I want to be an antitrust or I want to be a litigator or a corporate, but how well you explain why you're interested in each or why you don't know yet is often, you know, the most important thing. How well do you support whatever answer you give?
Yeah. I mean, these aren't blanks to be filled in. Check, 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 check. There's opportunities for you to demonstrate, again, mature decision making. Hey, I've made these decisions based on this experience today, and this seems to be the way things are going for me.
Like a law firm, an exam in law school, this is my position, and these are the reasons supporting it, and you can argue both sides.
Right. You don't get graded on the right or wrong answer in law school. You get graded on identifying the issues. Now, what the firm's issues are, hello, what's the firm's economics? What's the firm's dynamics? How is the credit crunch affecting the firm's? So what are the firm's hot buttons? What is the supporter's hot buttons? So knowing the issues, and then knowing sort of the facts behind that is knowing your motivations, knowing your resume goals, knowing the subject matter that you're bringing to the table, and trying to integrate the two. Not that it has to be a perfect fit. You have the luxury now, actually the same as the law school exam, of answering the question with the question. Well, the fact pattern doesn't actually speak to Mrs. Paul's graph having, you know, seen the box of dynamite with explosives. However, so you can raise questions in your response back that shows that you're smart enough to understand there are holes in your information and having, again, solicit that kind of information. This way you were on an exam. Although the fact pattern can state this, you know, if this were the case, this could have been the outcome, whereas if this were the case, that could have been the outcome. Personality, fit, very, very important. What the heck are they looking for? Substance, we're going to talk all about that. But certainly the personality fit, you know, the broken record you've heard from me and from our office, I hope by this point, many, many times, can't oversell it. What percent is the suspicious about it? What percent of an interview is really won or lost on the perception of fit, that is to say, as the interviewer?
75%.
75%. This is most of your interview, folks. And if you've done mock interviews with me, you know that I talk about this a lot. But why is that? What is it?
If somebody likes you on a personal level and they could see themselves enjoying spending time with you for hours and hours a week, which is they're going to play up your strengths and minimize your negative. If they don't like you from a personal standpoint, don't think they would enjoy working with you, they're going to play up any weaknesses and play down your strengths. And so from a personal, it's a level of, I think, being who you are. And Matt, you said before about not treating it like a deposition. Treating it like a conversation. I know we're all nervous before interviews and sort of, you have a tendency to be formal, but the more you laugh, the more you ask about their personal experiences, what you like practice about practicing at this firm, why did you choose Dewey Valentine? You know,
working with LeBlanc, by the way.
Exactly. Why do you showing interest in them as sort of just interpersonal type of thing that is so important that if they like you,
they will justify any shortcoming.
And you'll shortchange what happens sometimes in firms. Anytime I have a callback interview, there I would be the associate interviewing the candidate. I call the next person, I see what the itinerary, but I got a real dud coming your way. And so, that kind of stuff happens. I mean, I wouldn't do that, quite frankly. I don't want to get up under my but I certainly did get that call.
Like, oh, God, this was just a real loser.
That's what I'm on the candidate. So you don't want to have a person who you just interview call the next person saying I'm playing that a little bit up, but quite frankly, you know, look, this is human nature and stuff goes on here. This isn't a mechanic.
What we talk about, or on the topic of personality fit and stuff like that, some firms, in addition to like callbacks in the on-campus initial interview, are also doing cocktail receptions. Are there appropriate conversations to bring up, topics to stay away from, tips and pointers from those?
I hated those cocktail receptions.
Cocktail, Brooks and Gray is doing dinner, or has done dinner, and we'll put it all into the same category. Cocktails, lunch, dinner. That is to say, with respect to interviews that involve either alcohol, the ability to drink alcohol, and or food, what fair game should the approach be any different? And can I have a couple of comments?
First of all, I wouldn't drink alcohol at all. I wouldn't even have one of wine or anything like that. It's just, you know, as tense as it may be, I used to be so uncomfortable at those. I remember I was at O'Melveny Myers, and I felt like the biggest loser. I would just go up and talk to people about nothing. I thought I was selling myself. They thought I was a dweeb. It was so uncomfortable, and I would just like cruise over to the buffet and like take a blanket and just kind of stand there.
I got to get an interview here, but it's really uncomfortable, this cocktail dinner thing, because you have to force conversation.
So the best thing you can do is realize that it's uncomfortable. Don't let that be a reason to stop you from going to those things. Doesn't mean you should go, just because it's probably not going to be the most comfortable place. You'd probably rather stay home on your couch and highlight a couple other shades of yellow. Don't drink. It's kind of in terms of what do you talk about. I think the safest rule of thumb, ask people about their experiences. There's a book by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Anyone has extra time?
Yeah, I'm sure you do. That's a great book for interviewing. One of the rules is show interest in other people. People aren't interested. They may act like they're interested in you, but people are only interested in themselves. So if you can talk to them, what is it, you know, how long have you been practicing here? What do you like about practicing? Tell me about your practice. You know, you can, that's the best sort of shorthand way to get out of the lack of conversation. You ask about the other people.
You can also ask about if it's geographically different, if you're not from D.C., this is your second year here, you can talk about the town, or if you're interviewing out in Chicago, and it's a new experience for you, local sports, certainly politics, what do you think about, hey, who was that guy, was it Gonzalez? I mean, there's some stuff in the news to talk about. The Attorney General has resigned. There's the stock market is going haywire. I mean, these are more sophisticated kinds of conversations to have with people, this kind of subject matter, and they're not talking religion. You talk about things that the firm has on their website. There's lots of stuff to talk about. But you're taking an issue, you're introducing it, and you're somehow integrating it back into your motivations for being there is really going to be how you rather battle them with creating this kind of this environment. So really, you want to stay away from the booze at the cocktail parties, although you might be invited to, you know, lunch. Lunch often happens, and you go out with a couple of young associates, and they're like, you know what, we're ordering a bottle of wine. You want a glass or not?
At that point, if they're all ordering and you're comfortable, don't say,
oh, I'm told not to. Yeah. Use your discretion here. If they're ordering a bottle of wine, certainly feel free to have a glass. If you'd like one, if it's appropriate, it can be fine. But the real fact of the matter is, what's on the agenda? You're still interviewing. They love to get you off guard with these kinds of things because you feel like, hey, you know, all right, at the end of the day, I'm just moving from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock straight. We're out here, a couple of associates, they've got their shirts, you know, they're having some fun, I'm sure. Still being interviewed, the data is still being reported, it's still being brought back to the firm and processed, thank you very much. That doesn't mean you have to be a stiff, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy a laugh, it doesn't mean you can't have some conversation about, wow, I interviewed with this Barbara Jones, he seemed to have that very austere office, etc. Is his work personality like that? How is it like working with Mr. Jones? So, oh man, he's the worst, blah, blah, blah. You don't jump on that bandwagon, you just listen. I said, wow, okay, well, I've worked with some difficult people in my life, too, and I found that you can really come out of this taking, again, personal anecdotes and experiences and make them shine, regardless of what's going to be there.
One quick thing about lunch ordering. I know most people don't do this, but there's always the story about four people are in a nice restaurant, everyone orders, like, a hamburger or a steak, and then the one summer associate or the interviewer orders, you know, lobster. And everyone's sitting there, and then they bring out the bib, and like, crap. And if you don't order the most expensive thing on the menu, because people will come back and be like, oh my gosh, first order, lobster.
And don't order things that are likely to sort of splatter, you know, pasta, things like that, to pinch on the teeth. Again, happy stuff's some fun, but also just use some caution, some judgment there. Is it okay to ask about pro bono? Shoot, if the firm's, you know, advocating it, talking about how great their pro bono program is, et cetera. Sure, you can integrate that. Caveat, if you're coming with a very significant public interest background, having worked in the public interest sector, and, you know, when you really look at your resume, but for the fact that you're top 4%, I'm not sure mega firm would have really called you in because everything in your resume and your profile smacks of really wanting to work in the public interest. How do you reconcile that with the private practice of law? You're going to have that hurdle overcome anyhow. I wouldn't exacerbate it with asking pro bono. Now, if your resume is otherwise, and I wouldn't say that means it's off limits, because that would be disingenuous too. It would be bogus of you to have such a public interest background to be presenting yourself there and then mums about public pro bono work. I think in that case, that's a matter of, again, stylizing the interview to your fact pattern. Well, Mr. Interviewer, you haven't asked, but you might be interested. You know, I did work in Women Against Domestic Violence and these organizations, and you might want to know sort of, you know, why I'm here now. And if you've had that conversation already, or we're not having that conversation, you say, well, just from my background, you can see I've been very committed to public interest causes. At this point in my career, I've made a very definitive shift into working in the private sector. We've already had that conversation. But to the extent that I am still very committed to the public interest, I was really pleased to read that your firm allocates, you know, 100 billable hours per year to pro bono programs. Can you talk to me a little bit about your pro bono work? So there you have it. I mean, it's not off limits. You should have it tapered to your background and tempered to how the firm promotes it pro bono work.
I'm a little bit cynical about the pro bono point because there are certain things that firms love to sell themselves with, but they don't necessarily like people to want to come to them because of those selling points.
True.
Pro bono is one thing that firms love to use as selling points, but it's not a strong interest point for a candidate in a law firm. Not to say there's anything wrong with an interest in pro bono, but you have a few opportunities to ask good questions that show what's really going on in your head. And the question is, do you want to waste the question on pro bono? And I'm going to ask you two questions. Let's say you all were interviewing me. All right, here's question one. Can you tell me about your pro bono your pro bono practice at your firm? My question number two is, what types of people really do well in this particular practice? Are there any particular characteristics of people that really succeed here? Those two questions, which one would you think more highly of me coming from? Anyone? One. Anyone? Two? because it's more personal. It's showing an interest in how can you help. And as an interviewee, they want to know how you can help make their life easier. They want to know that you're interested in how you can fit into their practice and how you can contribute. And why waste the question asking about pro bono, which is all about me, 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 when you can ask the question that's about how can I help you, you, you. And remember, if you're focusing on how you can help them or how you can contribute to their goal and overall mission, that's always, I think, going to be a little bit more persuasive than a question that's focused on me, me, me.
Professionalism and civility, look, folks, this is where people also blow it big time. Not having a professional demeanor from the beginning to end, and that includes your interactions with the receptionist at the front, your interactions with the service secretary, your interactions with the recruiting coordinator, what are you prompt in returning his or her call on the administrative side. These folks talk, and they have a very real say in the decision-making process. So beyond the, oh my God, tell me all about yourself interview, let's look at the periphery. The periphery is actually not tangential. It's very related to the decision-making process. Be very courteous, be very prompt, and very professional in all of your interactions with everyone at that firm. The email should be written professionally. None of this lowercase nonsense. It just doesn't cut it out there. They hate seeing that. Use full sentences. Use punctuation. Know the basic rules of grammar. Can't tell you how many people get PO'd because they get an informal email drafted at 12:59 a.m. in response to an email that they sent 2 days earlier. This is on the firm side. Just, again, you're always, it's all part of the interview. All of your dealings, oral and written, are part of the interview process, part of the big picture. None of these might be the single, actually one of these things could be the single turning point, but again, cumulative experience. Cumulatively speaking, they solicit everyone's interactions with this candidate next. And that's how they look at the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Don't wear a lot of cologne or perfume.
Don't wear a lot of cologne or perfume. Why? A lot of alcohol in it. When you sweat, what happens? You evaporate and you stink up the whole way. I mean, really, you get overwhelmed with people, people's perfumes and colognes. How about jewelry? I mean, distracting jewelry. What kind of dress should I wear? If I'm a woman, let's talk about something we really don't know anything about. What should women wear? Let's start with the guy.
Guys, the only thing is, I've had some candidates, say, can I wear a tan suit or something like that?
Nothing's wrong with that, but you're always going to wear this. You call it back?
Not really.
Probably not. It's my personality. And I just, yes, it's right or wrong. I feel comfortable in this kind of thing, but Dan's point is exactly right. I'm going to give it to him. It's much more casual. It's much more casual, and it's probably not as much as normal.
And they're always going to be thinking, how's this person going to present himself to a client? And you're always safer going conservative, dark suit, red stripes, somewhat tie, something like that. Being a conservative. This is a weird thing, but chunky rings, those class rings that sell when you're graduating from high school, like those big chunky gold ones with the rupees in them. So anything that's just going to look a little like, I'd probably take off the huge class ring. Anything, a candidate that came in, he was American Indian, and he had this really just big, American Indian thing that was, over his
topaz usually.
I said, are you planning on wearing that on the interview? And he's like, I'm thinking maybe, but it may be a little too much. I said, I'd probably try to be as neutral as possible. Is there other ways to sort of
stand out
and express yourself? So just think about it, that way. It's not necessarily trying to show off a lot of accoutrements.
Yeah, I mean, and thank you, obviously, the same comments here, but I'm a little more risque, if you will, in terms of dress, but that does not mean I'm wearing Saturday Night Fever wear, or Saturday Night Hangout wear. It's always going to be professional garb. But if I have something that's just a little bit more distinctive, a little bit more interesting to look at, I would encourage you to get out of the lending mentality and be a bit more distinctive that way. And if you have any questions about something specifically, you can come and ask us over here. Yes, you can see there's comes out of visual taking.
What if you have dinner with associates from the firm the day before you have the interviews? Like, what
what should you wear then? Is that student attire too, or?
Unless it's articulated so that I think Rosie Gray did, that it's business casual, then I'll assume it's not business casual, that is to say it's business attire. So, always rely on, if you have any of these questions, what should I wear? With whom am I interviewing? How do I get to the firm? What time should I be there? What time should I take the metro to the firm if my interview is at 10 o'clock? These are questions that the recruiting folks are dying for you to ask them. They'll help. They'll be your friends. They want to let you know. They understand you're freaked out about these issues, and they really do want to sort of coach you through these things.
I'm really happy to be invited to dinner, et cetera. It didn't say anything about her tie, or it says professional casual. I'm not exactly sure what that means. And she, and it's usually a she, I mean, it's 95% of the female organization. I'm usually walking through that. So we rely on those resources.
And they'll probably say, you know what, that's a good question. I probably should have included that in the invitation. I'm going to do that in the future. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
And that's a very positive interaction with him or her.
Flexible versus bushy, you spoke about that. Again, if you have a line in the sand, you're going to have fall, forms, lead, or anti-flexible.
Okay, go for it, but I still think you're being a little too myopic to your detriment in saying this is it. If it's not this, it's nothing.
Because that's basically what he's saying. Show the interest, show the focus. As you can see, I worked at a second career, I'll integrate that. I worked at the FTC, Bureau of Competition, and I decided to go to law school after that, and yes, I'm in antitrust now, but and I do have a real interest in it, and I would be interested in a firm's antitrust practice, but that's not to say that I don't have other interests. I think actually with my work at the FTC, one of the things I was able to do was work a lot with the public in the Office of Consumer Affairs, and I like that kind of public interaction and being, so now you can start again, you're blending in facts from your fact pattern, but you're showing transferable skills where these experiences, you have a basis, a rational basis upon which to make these kinds of comments, carry over very much into the litigation sector, thank you very much, if that's where all the opportunities are, or into this other sector, thank you very much, if that's where the opportunities are. You're not being mushy there, you're being flexible.
Right. I made the same mistake when I was, Comptroller High Water is going to be a trademark attorney, and a lot of firms did not give me offers, and I called them afterwards and said, well, you know, you seem really focused on trademark law, but we don't have a trademark practice here. And I was like, good point. I made all these mistakes, so.
You didn't do a mock interview.
Yeah, I didn't.
I have a question up there.
What if the interview is really dominated by them wanting to ask you questions? I mean, they ask you, for 30 minutes you're sitting in their office, they ask you one or two questions, and they want you to just roll the whole time with. And you get them talking, and you've asked all that you could think of, and there's still time.
So you have 15 minutes left of a 30-minute interview.
Well, even if you have five. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
They want you to ask them questions?
Yeah.
Well, say, I got a good question. What do you want to know about me?
No, actually,
we've discussed sort of my motivations for coming to the firm and environmental law, so I want to sort of recap. Is there anything in my comments that I said that perhaps need further explanation? I want to make sure that you have all the information you need in order to make a decision. I think we've covered a lot of it. Okay, great. At this point, they're not going to sit there and like, well, expect you to make the next move. They'll at that point probably say, okay, you know, we're going to sue them early. Maybe I can move you along. Or they'll say, you know, do you have any more questions of me? And as Dan alluded to, you can always sort of ricochet that view. Or you can, of course, speak more about this because you're preparedness, your professionalism. How much do you know about their bio? How much do you know about them? And if you haven't already discussed it, I see you're a partner here in the firm. Did you start with this firm? Or did you lateral over here? I came here actually 4 years ago as a partner. Well, where did you come from? How did that happen? How was it culturally speaking? How was it different from? So now you're asking smart questions about his practice. You're asking good questions, and they're not just these bogus, in case of emergency, break glass, asking plain, stop questions. You're really making it organic, dynamic, relevant, interactive with that particular interviewer.
Another really good question I just thought of this is, People love to feel like they're giving advice, especially the people that are interviewing on campus. There's usually the people that are more like, come over, you know, come, let me explain to you what it's like. You know, they're usually second or third year that like to act like they're very important. Ask them, you know, what advice do you have for law students going through law recruiting?
Is there anything that, you know, being where you're at now, you wish you'd known when you're going through the process? That is a fantastic question. That will open up so much good personal conversation.
Here's a question for that associate. You know, Jane, you've been so great. Thanks for sharing these, these comments on the firm. You know, I'm so concerned. I really, really want to work here. I mean, you know, SCAD is my top choice. And I'm concerned, like, I really want to make sure that I'm distinguishing myself. Are there specific qualities beyond those that we've discussed that really SCAD and seeks in an associate that really convey to others that maybe perhaps I'm missing at this point? So almost helping them to coach you through the process, and in the process you're telling them it's my number one, and this is why you're my number one choice. I'm doing this because I'm truly motivated to be here, and I want to make sure I'm being earnest. I want to make sure that you guys are getting all this information you need. That could be a nice kind of show.
So what if the opposite situation happens where they're talking almost the entire time and you don't really get a chance to distinguish yourself?
Right.
What would you say? I mean, interrupt?
That's easy to cash out. You will get that.
I mean, you can say at the end, you've done a really good job at explaining the firm. Is there anything about my, oftentimes when they're talking the whole time, it's either one, they're nervous and they're not good interviewers. And trust me, there are a lot of associates and partners that are horrible interviewers. They have training courses for them. Two, they may think that you're a great fit. You've got everything they're looking for and they're just in hardcore sales mode. And so sometimes, if they're trying to sell you on the firm, a lot of times, that's just a good sign, right? Rise away, but say, is there anything else about my background that I want to make sure that I help by giving you all the information that you need?
Tell me about yourself. Are people still concerned about this one? It's basically everything you talked about in the beginning. Your motive is no single answer here. It's just your motivation. It's a little nice story that you give. But again, to get to the fact that you have, you're reflective enough such that you have a story to tell here. It doesn't catch you off guard. I mean, if it's catching you off guard, think about it for the first time at this point, you're sorely on the air. Three hands have popped up. We'll do one, two, three.
I was wondering, do you have any advice for kind of like staying fresh and like keeping your endurance up? Because I had a call back like last year and it seemed going forever because I had like five people. And do you have any advice for this?
Sure. I mean, this is an endurance. Dad gave me the best advice last year, which is have a power bar and half hour before your interview.
Power bar. Yeah, don't do too much caffeine because you may crash around the second hour and just go. Don't eat too much, but firms that are high in protein and
energy. And if you need to go to the bathroom
between interviews, clean up nice, please go to the restroom real quickly. Go and stretch a little bit, take 10 deep breaths, sort of shake it out, and then just go back in.
You're hypoglycemic, you need to keep your blood sugar levels up, and you need to sort of eat more constantly. Anticipate that, pack that with you, and then sort of nibble on that after the interview or cope your time. So
I actually want to go back to the question when they're asking you questions. I felt like in most of the screening interviews I've been in, it's about half and half.
Oh.
That they're asking questions of me for about half the time, and then they want to leave enough time for me to ask questions. Is that going to be the same in callbacks? So it's half an hour, and they're going to leave about 10 minutes to.
Probably.
Okay.
It's usually half and half, but in terms of you can ask the same people the same questions, and you can give the same answer. Sometimes people go to me, well, I have four interviews, and three of the people asked me the same question. So what did you say? I didn't want to give the same answer, so I gave them different answers. Sound like a broken record. You want to be consistent.
And if there's, it's not just like, what's your favorite color? Actually, maybe it is. If the question permeates throughout the interviewers, you might even want to start the conversation there. Forget about answering the damn question. See, well, I haven't answered the question, but it's interesting. You're the fourth person today that I've asked me that question. I'd like to know, is there something about the that question that really resonates with the firm or something you're getting at, because what I've been telling people is that if I were to be a vegetable, I'd choose a piece of broccoli, whatever. There's just something else beyond that response. So you can, there you have, you're using that person's question as a basis on which to get more information so that you can give a more strategic answer behind it. Yes.
A lot of the firms in the screening interviews have sort of been jotting down which practice areas you're interested in, and then my understanding is then they use that information to schedule you for callback interviews. So, like, if you express interest in antitrust, they'll put you with an antitrust lawyer, and, you know. So how flexible do you want to be in those interviews? Do you want to be rah-rah antitrust, or do you want to say, you know, I'm really interested in antitrust, but I also am interested in litigation or whatever?
That's a really good question. I'd probably, you know, focus on antitrust if that's what you're interested in, but always keep the door open because law firms, antitrust is hot this summer, but next summer it may be dead, so that's why you don't want to be too focused on a particular area. I would say, and this is what I seem to be attracted to about antitrust, however, I'm also, you know, very open to, you know, getting as much experience as I can, you know, while I'm junior in my career, but this is why I think I would enjoy antitrust.
And I put it in perspective. That is to say, well, I'm very pleased that I, during the initial screening interview, they asked me specifically, which area did I see myself in. And I told them at that point, well, with my limited experience so far, I'm thinking maybe these practices. So you can set up to this partner or this associate. She might not know to what degree you articulated interest in antitrust. And then she's seeing you, so you know they care a lot of people who said they're interested. So you may have just articulated a very vague, passing interest in antitrust when you're screening interview. They threw that down. Now you're meeting with someone who's like, okay, so what's your interest in antitrust? So maybe going back and setting the stage as to why perhaps you might be here, as opposed to assuming that, oh my God, I said I'm interested in it, now I have to be demonstrate a sincere interest in it. So go back, and what I talked to the interviewer about was an interest in it based on X, Y, and Z, and then they go, oh, okay, then they'll have a better perspective as to your relationship to antitrust. Yes.
This goes a little bit back to the questions for the interviewer. In my mock interview, the person I interviewed was telling me to ask, once you ask the question, what skills are, you know, are best successful here, then when they tell you, you follow it up with, well, as you can see, 1, 2, and 3, I have those skills. My problem is that sometimes I have awkward moments in the interview, and that usually happens when I'm not prepared for them to pay me a compliment, and I'm just sitting there, like, what do you say? Do you say thank you? Or I know it sounds weird, but it's just that I just.
You can give us an example.
Well, an example was I asked the question, what skills are successful? And instead of him saying, you know, 1, 2, and 3, he was like, well, and not to brag, but you would, you know, from what I can see from your resume, you're 1, 2, and 3. And at that point, I'm just like, okay, I just didn't know how to follow up, I guess, a compliment. And cause, well, no, you're used to being interrogated. You're used to being interrogated, so you're not, at that point, kind of
have flattery. Accept flattery and thank them. Wow, that's very gracious of you to say. And then either move on from that, or if there's something particular in how we integrated that, you know, maybe there's something to pick up. You can use the strategies of active listening, you know, God gave you 2 ears, 1 mouth, use them in proportion. Listen to what people are telling you, take in what actually he said, filter that, and maybe there's something in there. I actually mentioned that with respect to my first experience. He said that I would be ideal in that. Actually, my first experience involved a lot of that, but it also involved some of this. Do you see that? So being very considerate and thoughtful and reflective on what he just told you, and now who the heck cares what he just said? He's impressed that you paid attention to what the heck he said, and you're having a conversation based on that. So really, it gets away from your real original question, how do you handle flattery? Accept it, be gracious, thank you. But then your real question should be, how do I keep the dynamics going? How do I keep the love and the fear?
And one danger I just want to point out about asking the what types of people do well here, because a lot of people know it's sort of a self-serving question. What types of people do well here? We want smart, hardworking, energetic people. Huh, funny you should say that. I'm energetic, and it's like, you know, oh. So one way to get around that is to say, other than the obvious smart, energetic, you know, hardworking, are there any particular unique characteristics of people that, you know, beyond the obvious ones, people that really do well here? And then if they talk about it, you can say, yeah, you know, that's good to know. Obviously, that's very important. You don't have to then say, huh, I have these, because that sort of, it sounds a little bit too
contrived,
set up. So you put a little spin on it. Are they, other than the obvious, what types of things? And then just leave it at that. It's a good question, and every question does not always have to be a way for you to then, like, interject and fail point.
All right. There's a question back there.
I was just wondering about, like, taking notes into an interview or taking notes in an interview, that kind of thing.
I'm all for it. I think it's okay. The question was about taking notes in an interview, but let's struggle at the extremes. You don't want to be some sycophant scribe that I come from.
Don't use us as a feather.
Yeah. This is not a lecture. Every word that we say is in gold. However, having a notepad, by the way, being prepared, having your portfolio, having your resume, your writing sample, etc. If someone doesn't have that, you need to produce it. If you don't have it, you know, loser, if you're not prepared. How about if you're second for being poor? Once you sort of see you working with me, you're going to be unprepared there too. So you have all this stuff with you, and in this workflow, you might have a legal pad with you. That if the person mentions something, you might want to write it down because you want to circle back to that. And again, showing that very interactive focus.
When you're writing something down, realize that you're setting the signal that this is important to me.
Right.
So if they're saying something that's really kind of stupid, that's not really important, like, oh, I just got back from, like, a really long lunch. Be judicious about what you're writing down, because that's setting the signal that this is important to them.
And you might be following up. There's that.
And the other side.
5 minutes left, so I want to sort of push on through these and make sure we covered everything here.
On the other side, if you take notes on the firm so that you can prepare for the interview and bring them with you. That's acceptable. It's okay to glance at them. They're not going to think that you're ill-informed. You're just trying to keep the facts straight. And
I wouldn't. I think if you risk my first, if they'll sort of be like, you know, this person. It looks natural. It looks too much like you're preparing for an oral argument.
Yeah.
And you're trying to contrive it too much.
I, on the other hand, have walked in with cheat sheets, but it's in the context of Nicole. I didn't really tell if that's, like, I don't open it up, I see the notes there. It's like really a dreaded sheet. Like, write things out or something, there might be some points that I want to ask or things like that. It's a finesse kind of thing. I'm with Dan in terms of it. Doesn't look too great if you open it up and you have these things there. But in the context of other notes, et cetera, if there's some pieces of data sort of scrambled around that you might want to refer to. I don't know.
To make it sound as casual as sort of unplanned.
I noticed when I've gotten calls to say I have a callback, some firms have been like, this is yours, it's yours to lose, and others are like, it just gets more competitive from here on out. Do you approach it differently, depending on how they tell you you have a callback?
I mean, that's what I do say to you.
I've gotten from two firms, like, this is pretty much yours, it's yours to lose, though, and then I've also gotten from another firm, it just gets more competitive from here.
Great. I would embrace both strategies. I would say, wow, that's exciting to hear. You know what? This is something I don't want to lose.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sort of being a little. Actually, no. I think I like that response. And in terms, it's always more competitive. But, well, I'm ready for the challenge. I have a few more calls. Maybe sort of throw a little back in their face. I have a few more callbacks, and yes, you're right. It has been a very competitive process.
This is yours to lose too.
But basically, I think that
the bigger question here is what the hell kind of firm would.
And in what context? That's sort of the philosophy behind it sometimes, but to articulate it that way, that's just saying it almost enthusiastically, like, hey, kid, we love you, this is what we're going to lose versus, you know, it depends on how it was delivered.
More
what?
More the way you first said that, like,
I'm really looking forward to move forward with this process. By the way, having said that, since you've met with me before, you've interviewed before, is there anything I can do to make sure I don't miss this opportunity? So push it back a bit there.
And
Holly, you had a question.
What do you mean by role play or fact pattern?
Sorry?
Role play or fact pattern?
Oh, well, role play, in the interview you might have, especially some firms will do, and not really, especially if there's, if you offer a fact pattern, a written brief, or depending on the attorney, they could get into some kind of role play with you. That is to say, hey, you've worked with a client like this. How would you respond if the client came to you and called you directly at a matter you knew I was working with? So let's set up a scenario. So that could happen. You see that happening much?
It's not that much. Usually it's like the insecure people that have the... One quick thing about who here wants to be a litigant? Who's here interested in pursuing litigation opportunities possibly? Let me tell you something really quickly, because I know people are leaving. This is probably one of the most important things about litigation. Is remember that mock trial and trial, they're two different types of litigation at big firms. Large firms, there's litigation, and which is different than trial, being a trial attorney. Large firms, you're not arguing cases. You're not standing up in front of a judge, usually. It's very rare that you actually go into court. It's litigation management, which is brief writing, research, document production, all of these aspects. So be careful. If you're interviewing with a big firm that's got a tremendous class action practice or a big antitrust litigation group, remember not to say, you know, well, I want to be a litigator because I love arguing with a judge. That is more appropriate for a smaller trial type of practice. And if you're interviewing with a smaller trial type of practice, then you can talk about moot court and mock trials, things like that. But just remember that distinction for big firms.
Let's talk about a job. Boy, you have your hand up.
Yes, I actually had a question about thank you letters. One of the written materials from Career Services said that after you go to your interviews, you should send a hard copy thank you letter to every person you interviewed with by regular mail. And I worked in Silicon Valley, and if you did that, then they would think that you're really not technologically on par. So my question is this a cultural difference, or are email thank you letters appropriate here?
Very quickly. Know your environment. You're absolutely right. I don't know if the document says that exclusively, but if it does, then it's probably integrated into this email. This email is perfectly fine these days, but I would actually have the protocol therein. That is to say, a formal, as you would written letter. And of course, if you're dealing with a tech savvy firm, you don't want to be a Luddite and send something, you know, by hand. Having said that, if with the firms that you're really looking to impress, I don't think it's
I think it's a really decent idea to also follow up.
I'm just sending you a quick thank you note, blah, blah, blah. I've also put a couple of them in the mail. You don't have to do it that way.
The decisions are usually made
pretty quickly thereafter.
Yeah, just focus on doing it.
But thank you notes are a real good idea.
Since you want to send it out quickly,
yeah.
How soon is too soon for a thank you note? I mean, do you want to show that you put responses? Like,
yes, inside of 23 hours, I think, is a little creepy. Okay. 24 hours post, I think, is would be different on that?
I think within 5 hours is creepy. I think if, you know, if you interview in the morning and send it later on in the day, I think it shows this person's on the ball.
That's true, yeah. I think
within 5 minutes, creepy.
Yeah.
These two students.
I was just going to ask, with regards to emailing, do you totally not recommend that we do that at night? Like, if we, you know, we're up late working on sending out some stuff, and we send out a couple of applications, no?
Well, I think you're sort of asking, I think you're setting the question up to sound like it might be a little groggy, et cetera, and at this point we just want to get it out. If that's the point, that is, sending up late at night means almost as an afterthought. And after type that bloody thing up, go overnight, wake up the next morning, proof it again. And then perhaps send it out. But if nighttime is the end of the day, you have the interview, you know, already knew, you know, the group position, then I have your roommate or someone else, you know, check it out and send it out.
Firm asks you how many callbacks you've had, or how many offers you have, or where you stand in the process. If we gave you an offer, what should be an appropriate response to that?
In
terms of if you're interviewing, if they ask where else you're interviewing, I always find that it's best to just, you know, tell them other places, because if you say, I'm not comfortable disclosing that, that's sort of an uncomfortable barrier.
say, you know, if you don't want it to disclose, you feel like you're this the only firm you're interviewing at, and you're interviewing at another firm in Los Angeles, and you don't necessarily want to, like, talk about interviewing different cities, you can say, you know, I'm interviewing at a couple other, you know, similarly situated type of firms, but this is, I'm interested in this firm because if they say, would you accept an offer from here, I would say, you know, obviously, you know, this is, beyond, you know, this is a firm I'm very interested in. You know, it's something I would very seriously consider. So, I mean,
two or three other callbacks outstanding.
Yeah, I've got a couple other callbacks outstanding, but I've been impressed with what I've seen so far. And then,
yeah. at this point in time, I think this would be the strongest offer. But as you can appreciate, for everyone's good, I'm trying to make the most informed decision possible.
Right.
I'm going to finish up my callback next week, and I just didn't pay my time at next week.
I want to make sure I do my proper duty.
Is it contradictory to the point where it would hurt you to say you're interested in litigation and some transactional work, or as long as you got a decent answer for why? Is that okay?
You have a decent answer for why, it's okay. They don't expect you to know exactly what you want just because you've taken first year class, which has absolutely nothing to do with the real world.
And they're not mutually exclusive litigation transactions.
Yeah, as long as you can explain why you think you need to do those.
Thanks, everybody. I love you.